if they are going, if they constantly have a problem with your premium price point, you need to deliver a little nugget of information in the first 30-second proposition as to why you're premium. And then that doesn't come up so much. No one buying a Rolls Royce has a problem with the price.
Welcome to the Marketing Study Lab podcast with me, Peter Sumpton, the Lego master of marketing and marketing consultant, providing you with the building blocks you need to be a successful marketer. This intro lasts about 1 minute, so feel free to skip forward if you've heard all this before. I seriously won't be offended. If you're new to the show, we chat to amazing people to give you practical advice you can implement right now that will make you and your marketing truly awesome. The conversations we have will lead you to the actionable marketing knowledge you've been craving, and now you've found it, so you can relax and enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks to all those that have left a 5-star Apple Podcast review. It's the best way to support what I'm trying to do here. If you have a burning marketing question, you can catch me on LinkedIn. I know I'm supposed to say the links are in the show notes, but let's face it, you've got better things to do than try and find those pesky show notes right now. Enough of the show intro. Let's get on with introducing our guest. Just a quick note that this is part one of two of this interview with Richard Moore. He provided so much value that I decided to chop him in half and serve him up over 2 weeks for you. And now that odd and a little scary intro is out of the way, here's Pete with the official intro. And remember to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss part two next week. Sales and marketing, two opposites. But opposites often attract, and in this case, they should and do. I always like to think about sales as the end result of good marketing, and I stand by that. Next time you're with your sales director, try and explain that premise and watch them blow their lid. It's funny for a time. Anyway, that said, understanding the sales process and how it can work in tandem with marketing, nice bit of integration there, can be the difference between closing a sale or getting the door closed on you. So it's about time we put some clarity around this. And who better than Richard Moore, or the Richard Moore, as his domain name states. Richard has gone from 60-hour work weeks in the City of London to setting up his own business to help others gain momentum as they launch their business. Richard also runs a weekly live Q&A and creates courses such as Basics of Sales and his flagship product, the LinkedIn Client Accelerator Program. He's been featured in Forbes, The Huffington Post, Inc., Thrive, Influensive, as well as podcasts just like this, and probably this is the most prestigious out of the lot, to be fair. So in this episode, we're going to cover getting into the right mindset, gaining the attention of the right clients, warming up leads, dealing with objections, closing the sale, and what to do next. But first, I need to know, Richard, what is your favourite Wonderland? Winter, Alice in, or Boogie?
Now, not Alice. Let's do deduction to make life easier. Not Alice, not so fast. Actually, winter, I think Winter Wonderland, there's a lot of good stuff around that. And I know good gifts are coming as well when it gets Winter Wonderland, typically from myself to me.
Nice.
So yeah, if selfish reasons, Winter Wonderland, there's my weird logic.
Okay, cool. No, I like that. We love a bit of weird logic on this podcast. So some more sensible discussions then. What's the story that brings you to this point in your career, and what are you up to right now?
Yeah, good question. So the very short version was kind of three main bits that were meant to happen and then developed as they were. So I was in academia doing, I finished my master's, wanting to do a PhD and write books, be a lecturer, and just, you know, I was romantic about being in libraries. You know, like, I don't know, for some reason that was really amazing to me. So I wanted to do that. Didn't get funding, so I needed a job because my mother said, you're not going home, you need to get a job, because he was very much push you out there kind of person. So I had to take the first job I could find, and the first interview I had was for a company, in 2002, selling internet marketing. So very interesting, best part of 18 odd years ago, selling something that was quite new for many, and selling. I'm quite the introvert. I was, you know, a studious type, you know, and now I'm cold calling people to try and sell them. But I stuck it out. I wasn't allowed to quit. Again, my mother's influence. And I was like, I just need to kind of keep pushing through. So I went through a lot of iterations of sales, and I've always been in that space. So, you know, after a year or two, I was become a sales manager and so on, and went through different types of sales, different companies and so on. Ultimately, I left corporate London in 2013. I was a sales director at a headhunting company, and I started my own consulting business. I was actually already doing a bit of offline consulting, helping people learn how to sell without being difficult or irritating. And what happened was very quickly evolved to leveraging online. So first Facebook out of 2014 into 2015, then into Instagram, and then to LinkedIn from 2018. And so what I do today, to answer your second question, is I coach corporate and online as well. So really from startups and entrepreneurs and solopreneurs through to big corporates on two things. So depending on what they're after, usually it's sales and like advanced sales and making sure they close their big deals because they need to make sure that this money comes in to keep things afloat, especially in a time like this. All the way through to my LinkedIn Client Accelerator, which focuses on helping people understand how to convert through a content-led approach on LinkedIn. So specifically on LinkedIn. And I focus on that because it's you must see this more than most, this worry that there's a lot of people that spend huge amounts of resource on content, and at best they get engagement and following and noise and attention is created, but there's no translation into sales. So that moment to pivot elegantly and get people what they deserve really is really an amazing thing to be able to help people with, because just by virtue of the fact of being on the pitch for this amount of time means I've got a good handle on how to do it. And it's great. It's really nice people having that kind of sense that they're getting real results they deserve now. So it's a really kind of fulfilling space. There's a few other things as well, but in the main, there's that. And I've done a lot of charity-based business events until the pandemic hit us, which were really cool. Literally across the world, we did 26 of them from Melbourne to San Francisco. Wow. And that was, it was a LinkedIn and a sales thing. And all of it was demonstrating that you can bring an attention and convert it. And because I wanted to kind of give back a bit, literally everything made from those events went to local charities. So it was really nice to raise money from that kind of leverage, I suppose, as well. It's really a nice thing to run in tandem with the consulting work.
That's excellent. I think one point I just want to pick up on there was near the very, very start when you're talking about you were looking at libraries, and I can imagine what's going through your head there, that nostalgic sunlight coming through. You can see the dust in the background, all books and historic. Yeah, absolutely. But you said you were introverted as well, and you certainly don't come across as that. That's the last thing I would say you are. And that's not to say that introverts can't, when they're on camera or when they're doing their work, look as if they're extrovert, where really they're introverted. But do you think that there was a pivot point, or because you said you weren't really into sales or being introverted, it wasn't really the cold calling aspect, wasn't really for you. Was it like you found your passion, or was it you had to really teach yourself these types of things?
Such a good question. And because if you go back further, I was never a very social child, like really a late bloomer. And if you go back to like when I'm 14, and everyone, I can see it now, everyone's outside playing on the school field, playing football or whatever, or chasing girls. And I'm programming in the computer lab. Like, that's what I was like, And so what was interesting is that I don't know if it's an omnivert or an amnivert, but basically I really like my own company. I get a lot of energy just from my own company and from the quiet and the focus, but I don't, it's weird. It's a weird thing, Peter, where like chasing the social and chasing being around people doesn't feel natural. But I've definitely conditioned myself to anchor it to positive outcomes. And when I'm doing it, I get a lot of great energy. So being around people is also amazing. So when I'm in that moment, I'm still good. And I think to answer your question, it's really interesting because Seth Godin's latest book, The Practice, kind of talks about this, not just looking at outcomes and doing what you love, but it's loving what you do and loving the process. So yeah, I wasn't into sales, but what I was really into was understanding the process, and by sticking out the sales, and you know, getting commission is a wonderful thing when you're 22. It's like you feel that you can take over the world. It really did. Again, as another example of anchoring the positive to that kind of process. So I've always been a lover of good process that delivers great outcomes, and that's I think what came out of it. So in those early years, abusive though the relationship with sales was, because it's cold calling, it's hard, and some days you're like, why am I doing this? But at the same time, it was like there was such upside, and discovering yourself and putting yourself on the front line and really learning at the sharp edge what business can be like, you know, the real soft skills was actually quite thrilling. And I think I've always been quite mindful of things that can help despite me maybe having some kind of natural aversion to them. So I felt I'm certainly quite the stoic, and I pushed myself through knowing that this was good for me. And I, that's kind of a story I've repeated through my career. It's like, just because you don't want to do it, it doesn't mean you shouldn't. And actually, if the upside is strong enough, do it despite the emotional pushback. And so I really think that I fell in love with the process. And if you look at what I do now, I think anyone who does, for instance, my accelerator will agree that I very much bring the science and the theory made practical. So I do like to go deep, and I've gone as far as behavior and psychology and stuff like that, because it's really fascinating. So I'm ever the student, I think, and that's nice that trait has come through. But I like looking at taking theory and things and making process and systems that have great outcomes. So it's been an interesting one. And I think, yeah, I think I definitely have evolved somewhat. I think there's still an introvert in me that loves the peace and quiet, and perversely is kind of quite okay with the lockdown we have in the UK at the moment. But simultaneously, I'm desperately missing all the travel we were doing back in 2019 because of seeing all these great people that you and I have as mutual connections. In fact, it's really tough to miss that.
I think that's something that a lot of listeners will relate to, the fact that it might be something that they don't want to do, but it doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't do it. And I think we've all been there, where you get that little inkling, almost a, I can't be bothered, or I could easily avoid this, but that's probably the worst thing you can do. And then I love the fact, because absolutely what I love to do is get that theory, particularly within marketing, and then link it to practical application or some kind of process, or make it from the point of view of, this can actually help you in the future. This is why we should be using these things.
Yeah, quite right. I think so. I mean, just it's always nice when even with a lot of experience, it's always nice to learn something new and say, I can drop that into the process I've got. So it's always nice to keep learning. And I make a point every single day of making sure there's a period of reading and so on. And I just think it's good to do that kind of thing rather than think you know it all. But yeah, that's hopefully something a lot of us share.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to move on to some actionable tips, and your skills are clearly in the sales process. In fact, regardless on whether it's global, whether it's corporate, whether it's LinkedIn, whatever the field. So what I'd like to do first and foremost is there's a few areas that I want to cover. Sales is certainly not something that I feel I'm strong at, far from it. So I'm basically going to learn from you here for free.
That's fine. I can help as much as I can.
And then I'd just like to uncover some actionable tips. So the first area I'd like to cover is getting into the right mindset, which is interesting from your backstory in terms of pushing through that. Because I think the mindset of selling gets in the way and holds people back. So how do we get into that right mindset?
Yeah, certainly if you look at those who are starting out, because if you've done it long enough, you have enough confirmation bias in play, positive confirmation bias, that actually you can do it. And there are peaks and troughs. And it's easy to say to someone, don't worry, you'll have ups and downs and you get rejection, but then you also get positives as well. That's easier said than done. And what's interesting is that certainly doing a lot of corporate coaching of new starters in sales, the thing that stands out is the pressure that people put themselves under when it comes to selling, met with an aversion to doing it because they don't want to be rejected. It's social anxiety gone crazy when you go and approach someone for selling. So what I find is interesting is that people start going, right, I've got to make this first phone call, or I'm going to approach someone live at a trade show. This is really scary. And what it is their expectations are at the wrong level. And I feel it's a really important tip to think about the outcomes or objectives you should have in mind. If it's my first day, and I remember saying this to someone once, if it's your first day on the phone, for instance, and you're going to make some calls to try and pitch a company or something, your objective shouldn't be trying to close sales. That would be marvelous. But your objective should be to dial, 10 numbers in the first hour. If someone picks up, good for you. If someone puts you through to the decision maker, wonderful. But at the end of that period, you should be able to tick those boxes and say, I did those first calls. That's great. The next few days, it's naturalizing to a first level. And then you move up a level. Like now, today, I want to get 2 pitches, 2 decision makers. That's my next objective. And ultimately, you don't jump in and say, I'm going to try and get a deal today. Again, the intention should always be kind of been there in the back of your mind. I would love to get one, and I've trained myself as much as I can. But you need to remember that you are the level you're at, and experience is the best tutor. And you do find that if you're not getting the wins in terms of deals at the very start, that's a great way of crushing yourself. And it's not a healthy way of starting any job. Let alone a sales one. So that is the thing. This is something that's so prevalent, I find, is that people are setting their sights too high.
Yeah.
And they're trying, it's the same with marketing, as you can imagine, like their first Facebook ad or the first post. They do all the theory and the post, it's like, why haven't I got any deals? Because you've done one piece of content, like persevere, man. And I just think it's important to get that kind of perspective right.
It's very short-term thinking as well. That whole, I'm going to phone somebody up and the first 4 calls, well, I'm bound to get a sale. And rather than looking at the long-term, building up your skills, knowing it's a long process. And like you said, if you get in touch or directed to that decision maker, that's, in the first instance, take that as a win. That's one next step closer to where you want to be.
And when someone says no, like a great example, is working with a lot of kind of entrepreneurs who are starting their businesses, and they go all the way to the end of the process, and then that person says no. And all it is because there was a little bit of poor pre-qualification at the start of the process, and they had this person's like, this is great, I think we should do this, I run the company, I think it's a great idea to do whatever it is. And then they say, I haven't got the money. I can't stomach the cost. And what's so important is to not feel like, do you know what? There's no deal. I can't do this. It's like, actually, if there was one change here if that person just had enough money, that would have been a deal. So there's no question of my ability to do the job. It's just that I need to tweak this one thing. And often in selling, what people need to recognize is a no doesn't mean complete failure. A no means maybe 1 or 2 components were off, but most of it you actually did really well. So it sounds bad because a lot of people are like, well, it's not positive unless you get a deal. But it is, because it's good experience. And especially in the world that you and I inhabit, if you look at a lot of the online based selling, if you don't get a deal, you often at the very least end with a really good connection. And that's worth something as well, you know?
Yeah. So picking up on something you mentioned there, that's understanding your client, target market, that kind of thing, massively linked to marketing. How do we make sure we're gaining the attention of the right type of people then?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways of doing it depending on your approach. Mm. There are some corporates I work with and their entire approach is cold outbound. And so what they need to do is make sure that as much as is possible, they're looking at companies that probably tick certain boxes, like I'm speaking to the right person and they probably have enough money. When I was doing that, the hack I found was, if I'm approaching a company cold, who else have I worked with that has some mutual kind of commonality with them? And so what I always did was I'd say, right, who am I working with already? I would find a client we already working with, them, the person's name, and I do searches of any company aligned with that one, and then that's the next one I pitch. Because the truth is, if you're one of my clients, Peter, and you've got a friend that also runs a business, it makes much more sense for me to approach that person and say, I'm actually working with Peter. It just makes sense to show you what I've been working with them. The reason why is it dissolves the human like barriers that the animal part of our brain puts up, because they're an unknown person. By approaching someone cold, then I would rather approach them with a mutual connection, because it makes my approach okay. Whereas if I literally have no commonality with that person, the barriers are up, because that's naturally how we're built. The other extreme, of course, is more content-led, which you and I certainly are big fans of these days. And you pre-qualify by creating a reason why the ideal buyers should spend time around you. So content provides a form of gravity, if you like. And it might be boring as hell to most people, but it is specifically focused on a particular niche, and a certain set of people find that valuable with consistency, then their continued showing, you know, the fact they keep showing up is a very good tell that maybe you're that's a demonstration of qualification right there, and they're worth an approach. So it's a whole spectrum. We can work through from nothing to warming them quite considerably through marketing ahead of any kind of call or try and attempt at a close.
I love the whole fact that you mentioned gravity and content together, because that it's just such a powerful image to see that, and it's so right. You know, gravity is. That's what it does. It pulls you in slowly or fast or whatever it is, and content should do that.
But I think that metaphor, I often use that metaphor, and I have evolved it, because if you can imagine your content by extension is you, of course, that gravity brings someone close. But the point is, you don't want it just to be like, oh, that's interesting, then they move on. You want them to come into orbit around you. And they stay in orbit around you when you keep firing out great content. And, you know, there are certain YouTube channels I can't get enough of, because they are, like, I can completely nerd out, and basically they are my TV show. Whenever a video goes out, I'll watch that, because that's awesome. Other stuff just doesn't hold my attention. And this is a great signifier of someone who's really qualifying themselves, is if you are consistently putting out that kind of bait, for want of a better word, and someone continually is in orbit, so demonstrated by them consistently writing comments and engaging, it's a very good sign that there's someone there who has some interest. And then, you know, it's natural. It's the easiest pivot in the world to say, hey, I just wanted to say thank you for the recent engagement. How are you? And then we move naturally to, oh, it's fine, Richard. Thank you. I love your content. I think it's brilliant. Good. Do you? And then the obvious question after that is, well, what in particular resonates? This stuff, because I need her hand with it, and then you're off, you know. So it doesn't have to be difficult. I think when you're taking this approach, and I struggle to understand why companies aren't using the content-led approach. I struggle to understand logically why they don't do it, but emotionally I know the reason why is because it feels like it's not very transactional, and it's a patience play, isn't it?
That's Yeah, I wholeheartedly with you on that one. It's, you can see it from a C2C point of view, or even, you know, small business to customer point of view, but almost B2B, it's a difficult sell for them to take it, because like you said, it's not transactional in the first instance. It's building up that relationship in a different way to what traditionally they probably are used to doing.
Quite right. And the thing is, this is why 2020 was a very interesting year, I found, because I was always able to onboard clients, but the relevancy I had increased, because in the past, companies would say, you could almost hear them thinking to themselves, yes, LinkedIn, sure, online content-based selling, but we're fine at the moment. Like, we meet people, and often that was one of the big objections I had in the 2000s when I'd be like, you know, there's this thing called the internet, and that we're able to get huge visibility and conversion. And they'd say, well, you know, when we meet people every year in trade shows and things like this. And now it's very interesting that people say, you know, that whole LinkedIn thing, Richard, kind of need to know how to do it because I have to sit at home all day long, you know, between homeschooling and working. And so it's an interesting world that has kind of forced this hand and online was for many, many, many years a very important part of the playbook. But certainly now it's like it's essential to have that down. It's make or break for many businesses. And you see, even as far as sales in high street retail, one of the reasons why some businesses are totally going under. Mm. The difference between Topshop and Zara is their online component. It's been shown, and like that's just like the embracing of it is important. So yeah, it's interesting how the world's changed and it's kind of come to us in relevance, I suppose.
I think 2020 was a great leveler in some respects, or it just increased things exponentially by way of these things would happen eventually. It just sped them up in terms of, I'm talking business rather than, you know, real world things that are going on. But, yeah, you know, in business and digital and how we communicate and technology, it certainly sped things up for me, or that's how I saw it.
I agree. And specifically the Zoom call, because mm-hmm. the best way, if you take fear out of the equation, the best way to interface with a prospect and sell them is face-to-face because they have so many more, you have more visual cues and they can go off much more in terms of motion, that as opposed to email, for instance. I don't care what any email marketer says, face-to-face does beat it every time. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that it's changed in that face-to-face's best variant that you can use right now is Zoom calls, for instance. But if you go back 10 years, the headhunting company I was at, the team, we always did calls over Zoom chat because you could get so much. Yeah, even back then, because you get so much from them. And it was stunning to me that companies would just use a phone when you can use a call. So wherever possible, any sales call I do is never on the phone. It's by Zoom chat. And I love the fact that it's no longer like a niche thing for people. It is the way like everyone's used to doing it. And you get so much better. The results are crazy. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest tips in selling, if you're used to the phone, I dare you, try it by Zoom chat or anyway, or Skype, because the visual is like, it really just releases barriers and gets the focus as well. If I'm on a phone, I can totally check my emails. You know, it wouldn't be cool if I was, you know, on TikTok whilst I'm doing this chat, you know what I mean? It wouldn't go down so well. So I just think it's important to remember that the visual is a massive persuasion factor in terms of selling.
But for anyone that's listening and not watching on YouTube, Richard isn't on TikTok, by the way. I can see him and I can guarantee he isn't. Well, I can now he's got his phone and now I'm not so sure because it's just out of peripheral vision. So,
I've got a feed to another screen maybe. Yeah. No, I promise. It's all about you.
Absolutely, yeah, brilliant. And pause. Like I said at the beginning, this is part one of two. So join us next week for the final episode. Final, it's the second one of two. The final episode of me talking to Richard Moore about all things sales. Thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.